All right, we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Bruce.
Here.
Councilmember Biggs.
Here.
Councilmember Laraway.
Yes.
Council President McPherson.
Here.
Mayor Steer.
Yes. And if you would join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. First item is the consent agenda, and we are requesting to remove item C, the findings and facts and conclusions of law on the Guido U of I endowment, to give the staff additional time to make some modifications to that. Okay. Other than that, anything
else? Nope. Okay, seeing none, I would move we pull item 4C from the consent agenda and otherwise approve it.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce.
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs.
Aye.
Councilmember Laraway.
Aye.
Council President McPherson.
Yes.
And that motion carries. That takes us right to public hearings. Consideration to approve case number 22-10-S, preliminary plat. Troy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. For the record, Troy Behunin, senior planner in the Planning and Zoning Department. So the application before you this evening is a simple technical compliance request for a preliminary plat approval in order to subdivide approximately 126 acres into 386 residential lots, 27 common lots, and 6 common driveway lots. The applicant proposes about 27.34 acres or 21.70% of the project as open space, and the gross density for the project is proposed to be about 3.06 dwelling units per acre. The net density is proposed at 4.15 dwelling units per acre. Public Works does conditionally support the Valor West subdivision development with the conditions that are listed within the engineer's memo. And the Planning and Zoning Department does agree with the Public Works recommendations. So the Valor West project is only a smaller part of the greater Falcon Crest Planned Unit Development, or the PUD, which employed a development agreement. And tonight's request is strictly for technical compliance with the development agreement conditions and the allowed changes to the city code that were approved back in 2017 and 2018, and also with the other CUNA city code elements that that are required. Staff, even though it is a technical compliance check for tonight's preliminary plat request, staff did review the proposed preliminary plat with CUNA city code and with Title V and Title VI of CUNA city code, Idaho State Statute 676511, and also the CUNA Comprehensive Plan. And should the council approve the preliminary plat tonight, staff does recommend that the applicant be conditioned, subject to the conditions proposed within the staff memo. Now, the applicant is here tonight and does have a small presentation, but I'll be here if you have any questions for me.
Okay, any questions for Troy?
No, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Troy.
All right. Yeah. So if the applicant would like to present.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. Mark Tate, for the record, 1673 Shoreline Drive, Suite 200, Boise, Idaho, 83702. I'm excited. I think I've kind of done the history with all of you now, so I'm going to be very brief in the project overview. This is the zoning map that is part of the development agreement. The area that we're looking at tonight is this area highlighted with the red bubble. This is the overall zoning map, so you can see it's everything in this area is zoned R6 with a development agreement. We have done four preliminary plats so far. This would be the fifth preliminary plat. As Troy mentioned, we're guided by the development agreement, and we've gone through that to make sure that everything's in compliance there. Part of the development agreement has a density map in it, kind of a bubble plan. So that's what this chart is over here. You can see the total maximum density for the residential portion of the project is 2322. The area here tonight takes up this Family Village A, and actually part of the active adult area make up the boundaries for those numbers of units. Within the project, we do have the ability to move units around between areas so long as we comply with the densities overall in the project and the lot standards. This is the overall master plan for the project. As I mentioned, we've had four preliminary plats in front of you thus far. This is the Reveille neighborhood, which is all constructed with model homes and the first residence in there. The St. Jude Dream Home that was just given away was right in that location there. This kind of yellow and orange area down here is the 55 and older trilogy portion of the project. It's gated. The club is under construction right here along these lakes. The golf course, we're hoping that someday at some point this summer it'll warm up and grass will start growing out there, and we'll get to open those couple of golf holes. But that's in process. But the project really has a couple different product types and neighborhoods. These are really the higher end golf product, 55 and older product. And so this is kind of a new product for the neighborhood. It includes a 10-acre city park, which is part of the development agreement that we would work with the city on a city park in roughly that location. And so we do have some designs for that part of the project. Need to replace, this is a rendering, and that's actually built now, so I'll probably be updating that next time with actual photographs of that entry that's there with the plants. This is the Reveille neighborhood and the Cadet short course, which we actually just grand opened a couple of weeks ago. It's been extremely popular and busy out there. It's a nine-hole executive course. Right here, this is number nine and number one. So we're pretty excited about it. If you haven't been out there, it's very popular, especially with young folks. We're doing a lot of kids camps this summer and things like that. So it's been pretty busy. The entry, the whole roundabout is done and landscaped, except for a semi that drove through the landscaping yesterday. It looks really good. The model home complex here at the entry is actually completed now and open and has been for a number of weeks, so we're excited about that. There's four model homes in that location. These are more of the cadet course and entry. This is the project and what's before you guys tonight. It's a really exciting opportunity. The border of the 55 and older community is along the west side, so you can see we don't have any street connections because this is all gated and private. So what that allowed us to do is make an open space corridor that goes all the way along this with a pathway. So that will be kind of a regional trail for the area that would be maintained by the Homeowners Association with a pathway going all the way down from Cuna Road on the south up to this is Harrier Road, which is kind of a collector road in the area here. And we've got a lot of other pathway connectivity in through open spaces off of streets getting over to this park. I've worked with Bobby and the Parks Department on some different concepts for this park over here. As you can see, it's got some plans for sports fields, large playground, pickleball, restroom facility, that sort of thing. The entry. This would be the Valor West is not the marketing name. We'll come up with something a little bit more clever than that. This is the park here. So part of the development agreement does talk about working with the city on the 10-acre city park. So we do have some pretty detailed landscape plans that go along with the preliminary plat now for the city park, and we're continuing to coordinate with the city on timing and design and that sort of thing. I think we've got a great relationship. We work closely on the new Strobel Park over there, constructed with Indian Creek Ranch that the city just grand opened as well. So we like that relationship and think that this will be a great asset for the city of Cuna there. Some renderings. And we've laid it out with a really large playground that would have different age-appropriate play equipment, restroom, parking, that sort of thing, to be able to do youth sports or multi-use, you know, not so large that would have the large, you know, lighting towers and things like that, but definitely practices and stuff like that. And we've got a community pool as well that would be sort of adjacent to the park. They share a corner. They're not super close, but in that location over here. And I do just have one thing for your guys' consideration. We addressed this at Planning and Zoning, and the direction was to talk to Public Works on a couple of the conditions that are typically boilerplate, and just because we have a development agreement, wanted to make sure that we're not getting crosswise with what's already in place. We did meet and discuss condition F, and I think we're okay leaving that one as is, with the understanding that we've already constructed the offsites for the project. Condition 9.5E is a little bit vague, and so the request on that one would be to add at the end of the condition that we would be subject to this if we exceed the maximum number of approved units. So I've talked to Mr. Stevens, and he can address that as well. But we have been approved for the number of units and constructed those offsites. So the way that that was written, it's kind of vague as to what other improvements might be also required. So we know we've constructed enough for our project currently. So if we go over that amount, then we would be subject to that. So that's my only request for you guys, and appreciate your time.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Tate?
Not at the moment, thank you. Not for me.
Okay. No, sir. Thank you. All right, this is a public hearing. I didn't have anybody sign in to testify. Is there anybody who wishes to testify that didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay. Yeah, I need you to go ahead and sign the sheet if you would. And then again, this is a technical compliance hearing, so if we can kind of limit comments to development agreement things and that type of sort of thing. Okay. You may go ahead.
Ready? Yeah. I'm Cindy Giesen. My address is 1363 South Ash Avenue, Cuna, Idaho. Mostly I was just curious, the pool, the community pool, is that just for the homeowners? And the second thing is, what is this for family units? And you might have already discussed it, but how will the children be supported for schools? That's all I'm curious about. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Was there anybody else who wished to testify? Okay. Mark, I don't know if you wanted to address any of that or...
Mark Tate again for the record. The community pool, it is just for the residents. It wouldn't be a city community pool. We did, speaking of schools, I have had some conversations with Robbie Reno at the Valor Club. We're building a swimming pool up there that is a competition type pool. There will be a resort pool and a competition pool, and we've talked about doing some potential swim practice and stuff like that with the school district. So would be excited if that comes to fruition. We're kind of in a strange area on the school service. The boundary of CUNA School District actually runs through the middle of this preliminary plat. Get there. So the eastern side of this neighborhood is actually in West Ada, and the west side of this neighborhood is in CUNA School District. So this whole area on the east side is in West Ada. This side is in CUNA School District. This piece will not be age restricted. The other pieces to the west are 55 and older, and the Golf Villages is sort of age targeted. But we could see potentially some families where we haven't seen any yet buying in the community. And so, yeah, it's kind of a strange deal when we did the development agreement, having only a portion of the project in the CUNA School District didn't make it a good candidate for a school site. But it's been a long time since we talked about that back with the development agreement. So I think that's it.
Okay. All right. And the question is rightfully before council.
I know this was annexed in a while. It's essentially just making sure they're meeting the development agreements. I think, like I said, my concern, same as Cindy's with schools, just where they're at capacity-wise, half of it, West Ada, half of it. But I mean, once we annex it into the city, then it's just making sure they meet the development agreement that they agreed upon. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, there's no more questions, and I would move we close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
I'll second it.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries.
So I have a thought.
Oh, here we go.
Always have a thought. City Park, right next to a very tempting pool, and we know how the city feels about pools. I just think it's going to be kind of interesting having a city park right next to a pool that they cannot go into. Just, I'm not going to say asking for trouble, but there will probably be a lot of questions, like was just brought up probably.
I'm sure a few kids will run and jump in it, without a doubt.
Oh, there might be a big fence. I don't know. That's on the, yeah, there's going to be a big fence.
I would imagine it's. I would imagine they are required to have a fence around it for insurance purposes.
Electric fence.
Did the fence ever stop you as a kid?
It's pretty common now to see in the subdivisions, as soon as you drive in, the first thing you see is a swimming pool mm-hmm. area that's only for those people. And I don't know, that's just a common way of doing things, so.
It's like Crimson Point has theirs.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Just, but Crimson Point is right next to a city park, though, which that's what I was going to say, might be a little interesting right. situation.
True. Yes, right.
Well, if there's nothing further from Vinch,
do you have anything else, Matt?
You're good.
He's good. I mean,
it's already a done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it's just making sure they meet the right. development agreement. So this was annexed a while ago.
OK. Okay, then I would move we approve case number 22-10S with these applicants subject to conditions in the staff memo.
Second.
All right.
He did want to edit one of those entries in there. We want to?
Okay.
How does that need to be changed, Doug? You can go ahead and help with that.
For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning staff, if the applicant is open to it, we would change it to have the same language to be finished with if the 2,322 units are exceeded.
Yes, what Doug said.
Okay, motion and second still stand?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? And that motion carries. Consideration to approve case number 23-06, time extension, Silver Trail number 8, final plat. They've listed some reasons there to do that. This would be the first time extension for that project on Silver Trail number 8. Staff doesn't really need to present anything unless you have any specific questions you'd like to ask. Otherwise, it's kind of a straightforward.
Pretty straightforward.
Getting it done before the time's up.
I guess I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Of this area that we're referring to, has anything started on that at all?
For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, no, they haven't commenced any construction on this phase in particular. Phase 7 has been completed. They're requesting an extension to Phase 8. So this is a part of a preliminary plat that was initially approved in 2015.
Because it says, due to nationwide short of construction materials, unexpected delays in construction progress, nothing has been started. So
that's a rock bubble.
Yes. So the blame isn't the shortage. The blame is they haven't started it.
Well, so for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, of the overall preliminary plat, they've started 7 of the phases. So they've moved forward through 7 phases. This would be the 8th phase that they haven't started. So they haven't been able to meet the timeline. So they're requesting the extension.
Okay. Thank you. And that second question I had was, this is their first extension?
Correct.
And it's good for 1 year?
Yep, it'll be good for 1 year from the date the findings are signed.
Hey, Doug, when was it supposed to start originally?
August.
So, it would have had to record for 1 year from the recording date of the previous final plat. So, yeah, August 23rd, 2022. So it would have had to record on August 23rd, 2023.
Okay, anything further?
No. Okay, excuse me, I would move we approve case number 23-06TE.
Do I have a second?
Anybody?
What are you guys thinking?
I don't know, it just seems weird. A half a year has gone by and we're just now, because we've had the same issue for 2 years.
That's
I guess that's what, we've had the same issue that we've known about for, well, 2 or 3 years now. So that's that, I don't know, it just seems a little, maybe what? This is typical, but I'm the newer guy, so I'm just trying to.
What's the Mr. Mayor, may I ask a question to Doug? What's the process if we do not approve the extension?
For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, if the extension was not approved, the entitlement of the entire preliminary plat would fall down and the applicant would be required to go back through the public hearing process to reinstate the preliminary plat.
Does that sound right? Is he correct?
Yeah, because basically, and what he's describing is that you have these phases in there, and there's several final plats that have already recorded for what he said 7 phases, and so if they don't record a final plat for 8, it's the remaining portion of the preliminary plat that has yet to get the final plat. That part of it essentially expires, then they have to go and either renew the plat that they had for that portion, come up with a new plat design, but they'd have to go back through platting. It wouldn't have any impact on whether it's city property. It just require a renewal of the plat through formal process. That's something I would offer on this too. Doug, I'm sure, is more familiar with this part of the city code than me, is just like, what is the criteria for whether somebody is should receive an extension or not, I think should be part of this consideration too. I don't know if it's, there's certain factors the city council should be looking at specifically, and if they're meeting those factors, I'd say I wouldn't recommend denying if they're actually meeting the factors as to when or why an extension should be given. If they're not meeting the criteria for an extension given, we need to identify what's lacking.
Well, I think for me is that the EDUs for the sewer have already been allocated to this. And so if we have someone else who has access to the materials or other stuff that's been approved, that's ready to build, but can't get access to the EDUs because we extended this another year, right? And they're holding up another project that could potentially continue on with its building. That was all that I was thinking of. Right, if there's somebody else that says, hey, we need EDUs, but we're kind of stuck, and this project hasn't even started yet, we're going to give them another year, then that pushes the other people back as well. So just my thoughts.
But. Well, that's what I was kind of curious about. I was going to phrase it different, but it's basically holding EDUs hostage over any other development, waiting for them to find their shortage of materials.
Councilmember Bruce, something to consider with this too. I'm not sure of this, but just whether this is one of these properties that's part of the Key Bank agreement or LID agreement, and how these EDUs have been allocated pursuant to that. I don't know that it's something to be cognizant of though too, and whether they could actually be reallocated or not.
Yeah, I think that would be my suggestion if we want to check into all that. If we're thinking about denying it because of that, I think it's best that we do a little research on that and find out what's actually associated with it before. So my suggestion would be to table it. There's still plenty of time for them. If you want staff to look into that.
I would like to. I just, rather than having, you know, different project, if this hasn't even started, then, you know, and there's other projects that are being...
Well, and I guess I would have the thought that was the budget for this originally from when the original project started in 2015? Maybe they budget out materials for phase 8 back then? Or is this, I guess it'd be a question for Doug, I don't know. Or is it, the rising interest rates thing, that's a fact of life for the last several years now, so.
Mark Bybee, city attorney. So Doug can probably answer this too, but just when you ask that, it's how these phase projects go. You get your preliminary plat that can have, 16 phases in it, right? And how developers work on it, they go a phase at a time. They develop that phase. They try and build it out because it's often funding that way. And so they're not even, while they have the street design in a preliminary plat, that plat's not recorded anywhere. It's once they get ready to move on that phase, they'll come with a final plat application. So acquiring materials for phase 8 at the time of preliminary plat approval definitely is not happening, because we're talking very likely 8-10 years in the future before they're even going to get to that phase. And so they're looking at, you know, preliminary plat, they'll usually very quickly come for a final plat on phase 1. That will be the one that they're looking, you know, to get built out quickly and then move on to phase 2. But no, like a phase 8, they wouldn't be acquiring materials at all.
Did they know this was, I don't know, that's my question. 10 months ago in August, were they going through the list saying, yeah, this is too much money right now?
Got a year, usually they'll budget it prior to, you know, the year before, right? They're not going to budget it that many years out. I'm not thinking you're saying buy the materials, but right. I know what you're saying.
I'd suspect the building.
So I would guess, I would say that they gave that as one of the reasons. I don't know how deep we can dive
into it, right? Yeah.
I would like for them to check.
You know, maybe table it for a meeting.
I would suspect if you interpret that a little too, they're building phase seven, right? That's the one that, and probably still phase six too. So when we're talking about, like, they got approval on their last final plat, that starts the clock, or for phase seven final plat last in August, that starts the clock for the 1 year clock for when they need to bring forward phase eight. So when we're talking about the delays and the costs, it's really talking about how much it's costing them to build phase seven would be my interpretation, at least, because how quickly they're getting through phase seven is impacted by demand and costs and all those kinds of things. And so they're not coming forward with a plat for another phase when they're not even through the phase they're in. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
That's my interpretation of kind of what's going on there.
Okay. I appreciate the
question. Question for Paul. Paul, is this section part of the Memory Ranch connection? Because I know we kind of shut down the Memory Ranch side because of other legal issues going on.
Councilman Larraway, I believe that Silver Trail goes into Damskin.
Okay. Station. Thank you.
I'm not 100% sure on it, but I don't think it goes to Memory.
Okay. I'm done.
We have a motion on the floor. So.
Did we have a second? That motion then dies due to lack of a second. Do we have a subsequent motion for tabling? And if we do, what specific direction do we want to give staff
to bring that up? I'd say we just table it so that they can review to see if it was part of the original LID. Agreement. Would you call it LID?
LID.
So that's your motion?
You want me to make it?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'll motion that we table case number 23-06-TE to a date of June the 4th or July 4th. Well, July 4th.
That'd be July 5th.
July 5th.
July 5th. And then direct staff to determine if it was part of the original LID agreement.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Budget workshop, Jared Empey.
Oh, yell loud.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. I come before you just to have our preliminary discussion on next fiscal year's budget that starts in October. So as part of doing that, one of the first things I do is kind of look at the basic economic outlook as we see it right now. So there's kind of lots of ways to look at economic outlook, and so one of the things you might look at is the stock market. So over the last 6 months, it's been basically flat, but with substantial volatility, meaning lots of swings up and down. That's good for traders, but essentially it's unimportant for long-term planning. However, it is up over about 10% over the last year. So a lot of mixed signals there. Then we like to look at real estate market, and really we see kind of a mixed messages there too, especially since it looks like certain regions seem to be defining kind of where real estate's going right now. We see certain regions within the country kind of doing better than others. However, overall, it seems that there's national forces that may be overall true. For instance, we're all well aware that interest rates have increased quite a bit over the last, essentially the last year, where I've seen recent quotes of a conventional 30-year loan at 6.5% and an FHA loan at 7.25%. This has created much higher monthly payments due to higher interest costs, which is essentially saying that there's a higher risk in the market for purchasing a home. As part of that, that's caused a foreclosure risk for recent buyers, especially FHA, second home buyer, and investor buyers. In some ways, that's actually caused a decrease in investor purchases of single-family homes, whereas over the past 3 years we saw an increase of that, so an interesting trend. Another change that we've seen is we've seen a little bit of a reduction in migration, especially interstate migration. Essentially, this is due to an end of COVID, and also higher interest rates are making it so that people don't necessarily want to move unless they feel like they're necessarily going to benefit. And we've seen a slight decline in prices in many states that saw exploding prices. This is especially true in states such as Florida, Texas, Tennessee, Arizona, Utah, North Carolina, and South Carolina, which saw the highest inflation in home prices. And that's largely due to an increase in inventory. Even Idaho has seen an increase in inventory. However, that could be the large of small numbers, in that if you start with a small inventory, it doesn't take much to see an increase of 75%. So that's a little bit of a mixed message, but there is definitely an increased inventory from what we saw a couple years ago. And then a final measure that I like to look at for measuring real estate market is home builder confidence. And we see that's increased back to where that's basically a neutral mark. It's a confidence interval that's based 0 to 100. And in the last month, May, it was at 50. And it averages about 51 on any given month. And however, last fall, it was definitely a home builder recession. So that's a positive sign, yet it's not necessarily saying that home builders are necessarily bullish. They're simply going from pessimistic to essentially neutral. Another economic factor that I like to look at is consumer spending, since many economists say that makes up a significant portion of our economy. However, consumer confidence remains steady, but it has low future expectations, meaning people are pessimistic about the future. I think lots of that has to do with inflation. Rates in 2022 were over 8% officially. However, you may see lots of inflation in specific items that vastly exceed that. And in 2023, it's probably likely going to come in official number at 4.5 roughly, but it could exceed that as well. And a recent historical average was around 2. So we're double what normal is. And that can be caused by, you know, oil prices rising significantly, and they're expected to rise in the future. We have low unemployment and unfilled positions, which is largely seen as demographic trends that essentially are changing. During many preceding decades, we saw demographic dividends, and now we're seeing that kind of run out. And so because of that could take several decades for that trend to flip. And we're also seeing nationally budget deficits, essentially according to CBO, structural deficits between 1 to 2 trillion over the next 10 years. So whenever you see high budget deficits at a national level, you'll see inflation. So, and then, as I said, people are a little bit pessimistic because they expect higher interest rates in the future. And I think to a lesser extent, which they're not aware, if you have high budget deficits, the only way to really corral that is to drastically reduce spending or increase taxes in the future. So that's kind of weighing on people's sentiment, not necessarily for small purchases such as going out to eat or to make clothing purchases, rather large purchases such as automobiles or large purchases such as home building, which really affects the real estate market. And so, like I said, consumer spending outlook, as I said, no growth rate improvement, meaning people aren't necessarily spending more than they were over the last 6 or 7 months, but it remains stable, and people are trying to avoid making durable good purchases until they're more confident in the future. And another thing that's really keeping people from spending is the fact that the savings rate is much higher than it used to be. So you don't have as much credit to work off of. That said, that kind of affects different budget line items for revenue. For instance, building permits are mostly affected by the real estate market. And so given that there's kind of mixed signals in the real estate market, I don't expect that things will necessarily decline significantly. I'm not necessarily a doom and gloomer on that end. However, I do think that because people's expectations of the future are low, that building permits will most likely stay about the same as they are now or maybe slightly decrease. Property tax is also affected. So because property tax is largely unaffected by where the market goes, it's mostly just a formula that we receive from the state based on new construction, annexation, and a few other factors such as an inflation adjustment. Really, it won't be affected by the economic outlook. Then the final one, second to last one, sales tax revenue that we receive from the state. This has gotten a lot larger over the last few years. In the past, it wasn't as significant. However, it's grown quite a bit as Idaho's population has increased. And this is driven mainly by consumer spending. And so given that, you know, people are hesitant to make larger purchases such as cars due to their outlook, I think we need to be cautious about that and not expect as large of increases as we have over the past few years. Because if you'll notice, that line item on our budget has increased significantly. Then our user rate revenue, water, sewer, and PI, those are mostly affected by inflation more than anything. So when we see inflation increase officially by 8 or 4%, that may be on the consumer side, but on the producer side or on our end, lots of times we see rates much higher than that. So for instance, if the consumer rate is 4%, really on our end, it's probably more along the lines of 10 to 20% many times. So especially when we have to make a capital project, those rates can go out of control really fast. So it's important to not get behind the eight ball on that, and to make sure that we're budgeting effectively for necessary, not just operations, not just maintenance, but depreciation, which is really a silent and non-cash expense. So that all said, on the next page, we see our cash balance for each fund.
And I think that so far our cash reserve balance is pretty good. We've done a lot better over the past few years due to changing our rate structures and making sure that we're properly funding our depreciation. Also, we have our 2024 cash flow summary. So as you can see, this is just like, so if you picture, you know, your financial statements, you have your balance sheet, you have your income statement, and then you have your cash flow statement. The statement above, that's more like your balance sheet that shows your cash balance. Then you have your cash flow summary. That would be your cash flow statement. And so with this, we're trying really hard to make sure our general fund is not only positive on the income statement, but also cash flow, because many things on the general fund are really cash driven, and it's really hard to change what our revenue is because we don't have any control over lots of those factors. Then we're expecting to make quite a few investments in capital projects in water, sewer, and so you'll see those on the preceding pages. Then everything else is cash positive, essentially, except for the Park Impact Fund, which we're intending to make some investments in park property. And one interesting thing about park impact fees is they have a sunset period, and so we're trying to stay ahead of that as well to make sure that we don't exceed the sunset period on those, because I believe that you have an 8-year period. I may be off by a year or so, but we do have a sunset period on those park impact fees to use them. Otherwise, they're supposed to be returned to the builders. Then as part of this, we always try to match the official inflation rate for our COLAs so that we stay competitive. Again, that's kind of a difficult thing to always stay competitive. And in the future, we may need to look at our compensation structure to make sure that we're always attracting the best talent that we can for our positions. We really don't want to lose people to lower skilled jobs when they could be working for us and producing more benefit to the community. Then as part of that, we're expecting new positions to open up. So then finally, as part of this, we're expecting rate increases for the following, mostly for our proprietary income. We're just expecting to match what our inflation rate is. And then for property tax, we were expecting to take the 3% increase, which is just an inflation adjustment that the state allows us to take, and to take the full amount for new construction to be able to fund city processes and to not have a foregone account. So with that, I've also provided the detail by fund for what makes up all of our expected expenditures by line item. I've also included any capital projects we have. I know it's small on the computer. In my defense, it did print out a little bit better, so if you want to print it out, it actually makes a little more sense, even on letter format, 8.5 by 11. But I think that we have a good roadmap to making sure that the city stays competitive and also stays financially solvent. So with that, I just want to see if there's any questions or any guidance that you may have, or any questions about anything that we've discussed so far.
Okay, questions for Jared. I'll say that Jared and staff have worked quite a bit on really fine-tuning all of this and making sure that we're doing good things and keeping the city strong. So,
one quick question.
Yes, go ahead.
Jared, is he under the intergovernment revenue infractions, code enforcement infraction?
Yep.
There's no fines, but does that, would that show up under the police services?
Yes, so Councilman Laraway, so to your point, currently we do receive a certain amount of infractions when it comes to cases that are taken to the Ada County assessors. So those are included in the county fine distribution. The code enforcement infractions would be a new function that we'd essentially roll out in the next fiscal year. And we could actually put that in a separate section to maybe miscellaneous revenue so that there wasn't any confusion on that.
Thank you.
Okay, anything further or anything you want to see Jared bring back for the next presentation?
I don't know what else he could put on here. He's got it all, I think.
Is the 3% increase, is that typical every year? Is that what staff recommends?
Council Member Biggs, yes. So that's something that the city for the last several years has taken. It's not obligatory that we take it. However, I think in the current inflationary climate that we live in, 3% is well under the inflation mark. That 3% mark was put in place when inflation was averaging anywhere between 1 and 2%. But given that inflation is well above that now, I think that we'd be unwise to not take at least a 3%.
And that is convoluted a little bit now because of the House Bill 389. We don't get 100% of new construction. And so taking a 3%, when you look at the end of it, because we're not getting all of the new construction roll, that actually changes what that number looks like for property taxpayers. So that number is decreased by the fact that we don't get the other completely. So.
And then I have a question.
Yes.
The sewer and water, is this the 4.48, is that suggested or is that kind of an idea of what you think will increase the user fees?
So Council Member Bruce, so that would be my suggestion, is that we always try to match what inflation is so that in the future, let's say we went 5 years without increasing user rates, we don't want to have to increase user rates by 50% in order to catch up with inflation after 5 or 6 years, because as I said before, inflation officially for a consumer may be 4 or 4.5%, but on the producer end, it's really much higher than that. And so if we're not keeping up on inflation, I feel like we're not being wise stewards of the utilities that we're running. So it is my suggestion that we at least maintain that mark. So,
because I would think with the additional users coming on, and we've increased our sewer and water over the last couple of years, and I think we're some of the highest in the valley. It should go down with adding the more users to it. You know, just my thought. But I understand what you're saying as well.
Well, I think one thing, too, is part of our system is an old system, and so a lot of that requires some
upgrades like we did
projects that are maintenance-related that actually do. We don't use it for capital projects for expansion, but for maintenance and that. And most of those projects we've seen have doubled in cost over the past couple of years. And I think that's kind of where we run into problems if we're not careful there. So
Thank you, Jared.
What we don't want to do is have a whole bunch of, like Jared said, we don't want to have to increase a whole bunch all at once, so.
Thank you.
Okay, anything further?
No. Thank you, Jared.
Thank you. Also, as an aside, so this is the first meeting in which we will discuss the budget. Our next meeting that I'll be before you will be next month in July for the passage of our tentative budget. I wouldn't expect many of the numbers to change significantly. As I told staff, I'd only entertain immaterial changes to the budget, if any. And so the tentative budget structure is when we adopt kind of our, essentially our final product. And then in August is when we bring before you the actual final budget for our budget hearing. And so that's kind of the way that schedule works is we have our first meeting in June, then our second meeting in July to give everybody time to think about any questions you may have. And then that final budget hearing would be in August, so that gives us plenty of time in between our deadlines to make sure that all forms are filed with the state and county. So thank you for your time. And if you think of anything, feel free to email me and we can discuss any items that may be of concern to your constituents or anybody that you may talk to. So
thank you, Jared.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good, thanks.
Mr. Mayor, I have one question, probably more for the city attorney, actually. As far as the budget goes, it's going to be in greater detail on each the public works committee and such. Are there any restrictions for city council just to go and listen to those things? Obviously, if we're all in a group, can't do that, as I understand it. But if I wanted to go and listen to what's going to be the line items, so that I have a little bit more informed decision.
Are you talking about, sorry, Mark Bybee, city attorney, are you talking about meetings that would happen at a staff level where, like, say, Paul is coming in and requesting specific budget items or things to be included? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, an individual council member could attend those and sit in on them, yes. I mean, you're not barred from it, but if you got a quorum there, that would be problematic. The other thing I'd say is that you had learned quite significant information. I know you're always entitled to it, but out of candor to the rest of the council members, you should make a disclosure as to the substance of what you heard, just so everyone is considering the same information. I don't know that's necessarily required because it's not a public hearing context as far as like deciding a specific land use matter or something like that, but I just think as far as maintaining a good working relationship with the people sitting next to you up there, it's good to disclose some information that you learned that maybe they didn't have.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you.
And then while you're answering that, he had a question about planning and zoning, a council member attending a planning and zoning meeting. I'm sure discussing that.
Meaning like a...
One single council member attending a planning and zoning meeting.
The commission meetings, like an actual commission meeting? Technically, yes, you can. The concern there I have is you're kind of going and getting a preview of the application and the materials, and it's something that you're going to decide later. And so it's not being given directly to you, so I don't think it's necessarily violative of the law, but it does create a larger disclosure requirement maybe than that one definitely would. You'd have to come and report, I think, like, this is what I have, this is where I heard it, so I think attending that could create problems as far as the disclosures you'd need to make at the council hearing as to all the things and matters you are already informed on this from having sat through that meeting.
Okay.
So is it prohibited? No. I think it could create a functional issue as just to how you do your disclosure as to the information you've already received on the application.
Okay. Anything further? All right. Consideration and ratification of CUNA Police Station contingency funds. Chris Ingalls.
Thank you. council approved was $440,174.70. As of this date, we have used $58,078.76. Construction's in course on schedule. I'd like to give you a real life date, but I cannot get them to come. It's going to be in the fall.
Try as she might.
And then we will have a public open house and tour that will be prior to KPD officers moving into this new station. And anything that has anything to do with security, like any of the computers, those kind of things. But we will do walking tours that are guided to the public. They'll be limited in the group size because it's a new facility, but it's a secure facility. Then once that's all complete and officers are moved in and all the technology is on fire, then there'll be an invite-only invitation to the building and walk-through by invite-only, which will be the mayors from the other contract cities, the sheriff himself, council. It's pretty limited. It's the list has been reviewed by the chief to make sure that it's fairly small and secure group. And beyond that, I will stand for any questions.
On your sheet, you have sewer line replacement twice. Is that something? Is there something involved with that?
No, that's a duplicate, so no.
The math number's right if you take one of them off.
So. Yeah, I'm sorry. It was just a duplicate.
Just wanted to make sure you
saw it. That's why I was figuring it out. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah.
I added it three times, but, just forgot to delete that. Sorry, I apologize.
It was a test, and we all passed, John. That's what it was.
Good job, John.
I'm the only one that bit.
Way to read the details.
No, I just sat over here and added it up, too. Like, wait a minute. This isn't right. It's right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Welcome.
And this is an action item. Are you asking for...
I am. I'd like
motion
council
to ratify.
Yes, please.
I would move we ratify the funds for the Kuna Police Station contingency funds.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Consideration of request from P&Z Commission for a joint meeting with Council, Kuna School District, and Planning and Zoning Commission. Staff is suggesting scheduling for August 17th at 6 p.m. in Council Chambers.
Also, Mayor, Council, in addition to that, from the 6 to 7 hour would be legal 101 at the request of the city attorney because we would have the Planning and Zoning Commission and Council seven. Together. And then at 7 o'clock start the joint meeting expanding to include the Kuna School District. Because there's some new commissioners on, some new council members. So typically we try when we have new commissioners and new council members to have a legal 101. And so that workshop would be for commissioners and council from 6 to 7, and then the joint meeting with the school district from 7 to 8, if that's agreeable.
And now are we asking for their the board of trustees or just their representatives or how are we?
That's going to be up to whom they want to send. Sometimes the trustees come, and sometimes they just want to send staff. So that'll be up to them. And we will provide... We'll provide dinner for you, too.
Well, no.
No, that just sounds like bribery.
Maybe yes, maybe no.
It's an MRE.
Yeah, right. That day works for me, if it's good with all of you.
Thursday night? Can't do it Tuesday night. let's have to see if it's okay with the school district. And
We'll extend to the school district, but we wanted to go visit with council first. So if the 17th is agreeable to you, then we'll extend the invitation out to the district and coordinate with the commission.
Got to start somewhere.
Yep. Does that work for you too?
Yes. Mr. Bruce? Yes.
Right away?
I put it on the calendar.
I put it on my calendar.
Okay. I would
it's
move.
On your calendar. It must be good.
Yeah, it must be good. Okay. I would, what do we do? Just direct staff then? I would move we direct staff to set up a joint meeting with council, Kuna School District, and the Planning and Zoning Commission for August 17th at 6 for us, 7 for all.
6 for council and commission, 7 for all.
6 for council and commission, 7 for all.
Second. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. The first Tuesday of next month is July 4th, so that moves our meeting to July 5th, which is a Wednesday evening. Like Chris said, the police station is moving along well. You can't really tell by looking at him, but I think the police chief is excited about getting that done.
Exciting face.
That's his happy face. Everything else is going pretty well. So, staff's doing a great job. One thing was mentioned today, and I reiterate again, is I'm really proud of the fact that all our staff is really working as a team. We're really communicating well and helping each other out and making sure we're all on the same page with things. And things are going really good here, so appreciate that very much. So, anyway, anybody else have anything they want to mention?
I do. We have the pterodactyl event. Touch the truck a deal.
Yes.
Went really well. Lots of people there. Clear up to the end. We were starting to move stuff out, and people were still showing up. So Parks put on a really good event. Lots of vendors. Vendors ran out of food, had to go get more corn dog stuff, and ice cream was about out. And it was a really good event Parks put on there. So hopefully we can get it a little bigger and better next year and keep going with that.
They do a good job.
Yeah, did real good.
I don't remember. I think the stack wagon probably got the flasher switch worn out a lot.
The horn was honked about 9,000 times.
And the crane, that horn got honked a lot.
Yes.
So, anyway, all right. Well, that's all we have. Anybody, anything else? All right. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Crap, I already messed that one up.
We need to
get the military involved next year and get a tank. Come on.
We should invite, the school district got that.